This podcast is a presentation of Gateway Fellowship, Paulsboro, Washington. Experience community, find hope. Check us out at gatewayfellowship.com.
So last week, if you were here, first of all, if you're back because last week was your first Sunday, thank you for being a part. Maybe you're online today. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being our guest again. But you only get to be a guest like one time. Otherwise, you become part of us. So thanks for being here. And then I talked about last week, kind of our spiritual journey, and I likened it to going to a gym. If you were here, you heard me say that the Gateway is not a perfect church, so we're working things out, but it's like going to the gym, right, and working out your physical health. When you go there, you see people in all phases of their physical journey, right? And some are just starting, some have been there for a while. It would be really discouraging to go there, it would be for me anyway, and see everybody 100% fit, right? Like, that would be discouraging. Well, same is true here. We're all working out our spiritual journey. Some of us are just beginning. Some of us are in the middle. Some of us are down the road a little bit further. But we're all working it out. And I begin to think about that again today. I have a little addition to that this journey is like our life journey. So, for example, you journeyed here, right? Most of you didn't walk, I assume. Some of you did. Some of you did walk, actually. Some of you drove, and you went through a four-way intersection that you don't like. That's not part of your journey. You wish you could just blast on through it. Maybe some of you did, but you shouldn't have, okay? So it's part of the journey that you go like, I just wish that stoplight wasn't there. I wish that hill wasn't there. You know, you're riding your bike, and if we could eliminate that hill from your route, that would be really, really good because you don't look forward to that. It's not part of the journey that you embrace. Flying. Now, I don't mind flying. It's okay. But what I hate about flying is the 14-hour legs. If I could get somewhere in the world and eliminate that part of the journey, I would do that because that part of the journey is a real struggle for me because you're supposed to sit down and be still. And, you know, that's not easy, right, for some of us. So what part of your journey in life would you eliminate? Maybe you're traveling over to the other side of the mountains. If I could just get to the other side without going through Seattle, I would like to do that. Or maybe you go around it because you don't like that part of the journey. Well, the same is true for our spiritual journey. There are parts of our spiritual journey that if we could just like skip over, we would probably do that, yes? I mean, you would skip over maybe the health problem that you might be dealing with, right? That you're learning to trust God in. You would go like, I don't want that part of my spiritual journey. You would skip over some of the challenges that come your way because like, God, if I could just eliminate this from my life, then things would go really, really good. Well, the part of the journey that we're talking about today is the part that I would skip over. So it's the part that I probably struggle with most. I say, God, could you please like eliminate this from my life? I would really, really, really appreciate that. So we're talking about waiting. God in the waiting. And if I could eliminate waiting on God from my spiritual journey, I would do that. Anybody else? Yeah, I know you're all so spiritual, right? No one's going to write. Okay, here we go. I'm going to put three words on the screen, and I'm going to ask you to think out. You can even say them outside. What's the first thing that comes to your mind, okay, as we kind of navigate this part of our spiritual journey? Here it is right here. Time. What? Money, okay. Honestly, that one had never even occurred to me, okay? Money, all right. How many go like, not enough time? Okay, even though we all got the same amount of time, 24 hours, right? Now, how many, like, time goes too fast or too slow? So time just kind of sometimes drags on. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Okay, how about this one right here? Waiting. Huh? On the Lord? That's a tough one, is right. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. How many like waiting? That's difficult. You're waiting for something, like you're waiting for The check to arrive, you're waiting for whatever. Like, waiting is really, really hard, because that's where I'm at right there, and we're going to talk about that. How about this one? How about hope? You're like, wait a minute, what does hope have to do with time and waiting? Well, that's what we're talking about, because time, waiting, and hope are really all connected. Here's the reason why. Because when time slows down, or we're in the waiting period, hope can diminish, or hope is lost. So time, waiting, and hope are all connected. They are part of God's story and the journey of our lives. And I wish I could control time a little bit better. I wish we didn't have to wait. I wish I could remove that hill from my spiritual journey, but we can't. And it's not God's design that he does, because it's all connected. It's all part of God's story and the journey of our life. So insert your name there. We feel like time is running out. And we get tired of waiting. So the potential is that hope can diminish, or hope is completely gone. But God intends that we grow during this time. So it's a kind of repeating mantra for me, like, I'm in God's waiting room. God's purpose is for me to grow in my trust and in my faith in him. And so I have to intentionally approach it that way. Why? Because we can deal with a sense of diminished hope during this time, or a sense of hopelessness. And if you're not there, well, you probably know someone who is there. You're probably connected to a family member. You're probably connected to a workmate. You're probably connected to someone that you see frequently who goes like, I just have no hope, and here's the reason why. So years ago, Pastor Rick Warren put together a list of 10 reasons why people lose hope, or hopelessness is triggered. And I thought they were really good, so I want to share them with you, because I think we'll connect with at least some of them, likely. Number one is you feel alone and abandoned. So someone has abandoned you, or you feel alone, and so there's a sense like, I'm in this journey myself, and hope is gone. So hopelessness sets in. Life seems out of control. How about that one? It's like all of a sudden something took a left-hand turn or right-hand turn. You weren't expecting it. Somebody walked out. You thought they were going to walk in. And all of a sudden life seems out of control, and there's nothing that you can do about that. And so while you're waiting for it to work out, hopelessness kind of sets in. You don't see a purpose. How about that? Like, why am I here? What am I doing? You know, why did God create me? There seems to be no hope, or you're grieving a loss. That's a part of our spiritual journey. You don't have what you need. I read yesterday that there was, in the comparison of you know, a few years ago and today, that the struggle to provide just the basic needs of life are really, really hard. And some of you are there right now. Like, you don't know how your rent payment is going to get paid, or your house payment, or you're not even sure how you're going to put food on the table. And because of that, not having everything you need, like, all of a sudden, like, what am I supposed to do? Where's the hope in that? Maybe you've done something wrong, so you made a little mistake, and if that's you, then, like, you're amongst friends, because we're all there, been there, done that, but the enemy has used that event in your life to kind of create this sense of doubt and hopelessness, like, it will never get better. I will never be able to recover from that. You've been deeply wounded by someone. That is probably all of us, right? You've been deeply wounded, and so all of a sudden you've taken that on. It's caused you to lose hope. You're pulled in the wrong direction, maybe by life, maybe by your own insecurities, or maybe by your own thinking and your own drive, but it's pulled you in the wrong direction. You're hounded by fear. You're the one that wakes up at night, you know, and you wake up, you know, like your heart's just like pounding like away like that, and that has instilled a sense of hopelessness, or life looks like just a big old defeat, and you're not sure what tomorrow looks like. Won't talk about those things because of those things, we are in what I'm calling God's waiting room, and I'm going to use that quite a bit today. But when time slows down, when hope seems to be diminishing, questions begin to surface. For these reasons, probably a host of many, many others, we find ourselves in this waiting period. And I want to talk about hope in the waiting today. That part of the journey, waiting, that I would eliminate from my spiritual journey if I could. And so the question that may be sitting with you today is this. It's like, when is God going to show up in all this? Like, life is spinning out of control. I'm grieving this loss, so when is God going to show up? When will he arrive on the scene? And that may be a kind way of saying what you're thinking. It may sound more like this, like, God, why didn't you show up in my life? When my relationship broke up, why didn't you show up? When I asked you, why didn't you answer the way I wanted you to answer? Why didn't you show up? Or maybe it's this way. Maybe like you're late again. Now, anyone ever thought those thoughts? You're late in my relationship. You're late in my need, in my job. You're late in my life. I put my hope in you. I put my trust in you. But God, time's running out here. So what to do? And maybe the words of the psalmist become your words. What I love about the Psalms, and it's been said this way, and I think that is true, that the Psalms are loved by so many people because they deal with the whole of life. They deal with all of life, all the emotions that we have, all the circumstances and situations are all there. And this is where the psalmist finds himself in Psalm 13. He goes, "Oh Lord, how long will you forget me?" See, he's using the same words that we probably have, right? Like, I'm in this waiting period, God. I don't want to climb this hill, but how long will you forget me? And he goes on, how long will you look the other way? Have you ever had, it's been a while, since you and I have had 2-year-olds, you know, it's been a while since our grandkids were 2 years old, but, you know, those of you raising kids, you understand, like, look at me, you need to look at me, right, when I talk. But here's a psalmist going, like, God, you're looking the other way. You're not even paying attention to me. How long must I struggle with the anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will the enemy have the upper hand? Now, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but if I did, I think some of our hands would go, we go like, how many really, really relate to what's going on here? We go, yeah, I get that. We get a glimpse of time, a sense of hopelessness in God's waiting room as David seeks to motivate God, which is a nice way of saying, God, I want to be back in control. So I don't like the way that you're kind of working things out here. I don't like this hill I'm climbing, this waiting thing, right? I feel a sense of hopelessness. So the best thing is for me to be back in control. And I want to be in control. It's interesting because in that verse, those two verses I just read you, 4 times the psalmist says, how long? How long? Translated, I'm tired of waiting. Now, how many of us, again, you don't have to raise your hand, but how many of us have told God, the one who spoke the world into existence, right? Who gave you life and gave me life, say, hey, God, I'm tired of waiting on you. We've done it. How long do I have to wait? Translated, my time is more important than your time, God. Where I feel hopeless, the enemy has the upper hand, and you can insert your situation there, like the place that you're at, maybe the hill that you're climbing in your life journey here is like, it just feels like the enemy has the upper hand. And we respond like the psalmist in verse 3 that says, turn and answer me, O Lord my God. So like, I'm waiting, now turn toward me and answer me. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever waited for someone to show up? Like maybe the utility guy or gal. So you have a need at your house, utility's gone out, and you get the message like, we will be there between 6 a.m. and 5 p.m., you know, something like that, a span of time, and you're supposed to just wait for them to show up. Or maybe you're just waiting for the right person to show up in your life. What's the waiting rhythm look like for you? Where does God have you right now? We live in a physical world with 4 known space-time dimensions, don't we? Length, width, height, and time. And we recognize all of that. However, and this is hard for us probably to understand at times, that God dwells in a different dimension that is beyond our human perception. We want to put him into this box of space-time dimension that we understand, and the one that we know. If we can get God into this box, then we can kind of figure this thing out. But he doesn't live in this box. He lives in the spirit world. He's not limited to the same physical laws that we are. And this is why Moses says in Psalm 90, verse 4, for you, 1,000 years are as a passing day, as brief as a few night hours. And we go like, yeah, it feels like I've been waiting 1,000 years, right? In God's waiting room. It feels that way. But the truth is, humanly speaking, we're more comfortable if we can pull God into our world and have him rule within our own physical dimension, including time. Yes? Here's what that means. Like, God, let's do this thing right now. God, I'm tired of waiting. I don't want to wait any longer. And so we're saying to a sovereign God, here is how and when I want you to show up. And so, here's what I want you to remember. If you forget everything else, or you can just write it down, jot it down, is this right here. God is in the waiting. You may not feel it, but God is in the waiting. You may not understand it, but God is in the waiting. You may not like the hill that you're climbing in this spiritual journey, but God is in the waiting, meaning he is not absent. He's fulfilled the promise of his scripture like he does every day, that I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. I'm actually in the waiting, even though you don't see it. We're going to look at a story in just a moment. There are two people in the Bible named Lazarus. One Jesus tells about a parable, and one Jesus raised from the dead. And we're going to look at that story right now. But I can summarize that story in 10 words. And here it is right here. There was this dude named Lazarus who died but lived. I know you're counting the words. I promise you there are 10, okay? There was this dude named Lazarus who died, and he was dead. And it's all about hope. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper. And what we're going to see is this. Is God's timing and his idea that God knows when to show up is real. And it's what you and I experience each and every day when we understand how God works and when he works. So John chapter 11, that's where the story begins. Now, it begins in the town of Bethany, where Lazarus lives with his sisters, Martha and Mary. They were friends of Jesus. It was like a home away from home. With no casual connection going on. These are really, really close friends. And so Jesus is away. He's a distance away. And the story begins. He's spending some time away from religious leaders and authorities who are trying to arrest him. You can read about that in John chapter 10. But we're going to pick up the story in John chapter 11, where he, Jesus, receives some bad news. Are you ready? Here it is. A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters, Martha and Mary. This is Mary, who later poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick. He was obviously very, very sick. So the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick. Let's just pause there for a second. If you got that message that your dear friend was ill, what would you do? Yes. We would at least make a quick call, right? We would at least make a quick text. We would do something. We would be motivated to answer that call. Years ago, Jen and I, when my youngest was in college, we received a phone call. He was over in Bellevue. We received a phone call that Jeff was being taken to the hospital with severe pain. Now, it didn't come at a convenient time. Those phone calls seemed like they never do. It was 3:00 in the morning, right, when our phone rang and that message came. What I didn't do is go, okay, yeah, well, we'll check on you in the morning or the next day, right? That's not going to work. Wouldn't work for me. Certainly wouldn't work for my wife. And it wouldn't work for you if you were needing help of some kind, or it wouldn't be an expectation that you would have on yourself, right, if your dear friend was ill. But let's carry on the story. Lord, your dear friend is very, very sick. That when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death, nor it happened for the glory of God, so that the Son of God will receive glory from this. So although Jesus loved Martha and Mary and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. So you get what's going on here? Well, wait a minute. Like, time out. Like, hit the pause button. Hashtag weird. This is weird. So Jesus had this deep relationship with Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. He receives news that he is really, really sick. And Jesus says, yeah, we'll just stay for the next couple of days. There's something here that I believe is part of our spiritual journey. I think there's something here that you and I can learn, because the expectation of Martha and Mary was Jesus will be right here. He will show up. Insert your life. Jesus will show up, right? As soon as I call on him, he'll be here. God, I'm on a timeline here. I need you now. Martha and Mary, if they could text, we need you now. God, let's get this thing done now. Insert your life. God, I really don't want to like say this again or repeat myself. I need you now. But he waits for 2 days. Here's the plan. Jesus loves Lazarus. Remember the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus wept. He loved Martha and Mary. He will stop whatever he's doing and come running at any moment. That's what they thought. But Jesus doesn't come. He's waiting. They're in God's waiting room. Key point here, something to think about, toss around. We love the idea of following Jesus until it interferes with our schedules, plans, and dreams. I have a schedule, God. I have a plan here and I have a dream. Could you speed it up just a little bit? We love the idea of following Jesus until it interferes with those things. And then we follow up with all kinds of promises, kind of like, God, if you just show up now, get me out of this place I'm in, this waiting room, I'll start giving. When the pastor talks about giving, you would never say that. I'll start reading my Bible. I'll even be a missionary if you want to send me somewhere. We start bargaining with God. And we pray, and then we wait, and we wait, and we wait. We've started to believe that faster is always better, haven't we? And I don't know if it's a real word or not, but here it is right here. We've become quickaholics, right? So we love the fast food lane, right? We love to be able to text in our coffee order and get that and just go pick it up. We don't have to wait in line. We become creatures of quick. We want it now. Who likes waiting? Nobody likes waiting. You don't like waiting at the post office. You don't like waiting at the DOL, right? We have, Jen and I are in our married group, and we have military spouses there. I don't know how they work it out. I don't. And I've told someone, I don't know how you do this. I don't know how your spouse goes away for 3 months or 6 months or whatever, and then you wait it out. But somehow God gives them grace. Many of you are experiencing that. You scan for the shortest checkout line because you don't want to wait. We have Amazon Prime because it shows up the next day usually, right? And nowadays, you know, you can actually order something and it will get there before you wake up in the morning. If it's not there, well, I paid for it, right? We become quickaholics. And so the idea of God's waiting room just kind of goes against our humanness sometimes. But guess what? The Bible is full of people who waited. And there's a purpose of being in God's waiting room, and there's what I call a freedom. I'll share that with that in just a moment. Abraham and Sarah waited, right? Jacob waited. Joseph waited in prison. John the Baptist waited to be rescued from prison. Noah waited 150 days for the floodwaters to reside. The Israelites waited for some 40 years to enter the promised land. There's a purpose in God's waiting. There's a purpose in God's waiting room. Let's don't miss it. Here's what happens. Let's pick up the story again. John 11, verse number 7. Finally, he said to his disciples after waiting 2 days, let's go back to Judea, which is kind of interesting because now the disciples have a problem with the going part. So sometimes Jesus says, wait. Sometimes he says, go. But now his disciples objected, saying, Rabbi, They said only a few days ago the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Are you going there again? Meaning like, this thing's not going to work out, right? This timing thing is way off. You've got it wrong. Like, they're trying to kill you, right? Jesus replied, there are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have light of this world. But at night, there is a danger of stumbling because they have no light. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. The disciples said, well, Lord, if he's sleeping, he will soon get better, right? They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was simply sleeping, but Jesus meant Lazarus has died. So he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sakes, I'm glad I wasn't there. I underlined that. Because I go like, what, it's for your sakes? I wasn't there. For me? And what he's saying is, yeah, there is. There's a purpose in the waiting. God is glorified in our waiting as we trust in him. Waiting may be the most important something you can do and I can do in life. And a lot of us are there right now. It may be the most important opportunity that you have to grow spiritually as you wait on him. I love Psalm 62. Again, the psalmist, he says, let all that I am wait quietly before God. I told you that this is a part of the spiritual journey that is the biggest struggle for me. Because when I read, like, just wait quietly. No, I don't want to do that. If I have to wait, it's not going to be quiet. But let all that I am wait quietly before God, for my hope is in him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress where I will not be shaken. You see, there is freedom in God's waiting room to be discovered as we trust in him. As you trust in him, as I trust in him, we discover freedom. The sovereignty of God, in the knowledge that God rules over all your circumstance and my circumstance as we live out this life in his waiting room. You may be there right now. We learn to trust the sovereignty of God. His timing and his ways are always perfect. Anxious feelings are dealt with. Waiting on God is the graveyard of anxiety. I'm going to wait on you, God, because I know you know better, and I trust in you. We discover this place of safety that comes from being a child of God. And there are a couple things, and here they are right now. When it's not God's timing, you can't force it. You can force it, but it won't be his timing. But there's other part of that is this right here, this when it is God's timing, you can't stop it. You can't stop it. There's a purpose in the waiting. As is true in many of the Psalms, and maybe you'll discover this as you kind of read through. The psalmist declares his true feelings, but he resolves those. And I love this part of the psalm because in verse number 5 of Psalm 13, the one that we read earlier, David says this, but I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you have rescued me. I will sing to the Lord because he is good to me. See, our faith grows in God's waiting room. God, you don't hear me. God, you've abandoned me. And then all of a sudden, David says, I trust in your unfailing love. So where are you today? Because here's what we're going to do. We're going to pray. And I'm going to invite us. Either you can open up your hands like this, or you can just do it from your heart. Is to present to God wherever you are in your spiritual journey. If you're in the waiting, to present whatever it is that you're experiencing to him. Maybe you're waiting on a relationship. Maybe you're waiting on news of some kind. Maybe you're waiting, whatever it is. We're going to say, God, here I am now. I've been wanting it my own way, but in this moment, I'm releasing that to you. And I get that this will be hard. But just saying, God, I'm going to trust in you. I trust in you for the next step in life. I may not be able to see it. I may not be able to understand it. It's outside of what I can understand, but God, here it is, and I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to learn to grow in you during this time of waiting. Can we pray that way? Would you join me? So, Father, here we are. Many of us in your waiting room. Not a part of our journey necessarily that we would choose. We don't want this hill. We don't want this stoplight or this stop sign. But God, we understand that this is where you have us right now. And so we're offering up to you relationships. We're offering up to you jobs and careers. We're offering up to you the place in life that we are, that you have us. And God, can we just grow in your trust today, believing that you're always present. You're always with us. You never leave us. You never forsake us. Even if we think that you have, even if we have uttered the same words as the psalmist, God, where are you? The answer is you're right with us. And that's what your word declares. So we stand on your word today and we give this to you. God, may we grow in you. May our trust increase. May our faith increase, I pray. In Jesus' name.
Sometimes I fall to my knees and pray. Come, Jesus, come. Let today be the day. Sometimes I feel holding on to a hope that won't fade. Come, Jesus, come. We've been waiting so long for the day you return to heal every 'cause it might be today.
Come, Jesus, come.